Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.
Now it's time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finlay. If you have a question for Graham, you can send it in to afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question is a very pointy-headed one. What comes after postmodernism? Graham, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Sean.
I suppose if we're going to discuss post-postmodernism, we have to discuss postmodernism. And to discuss postmodernism, we need to discuss modernism. So what's modernism?
Then we have to discuss pre-modernism.
That's true, too.
Yeah, and pre-pre-modernism. No, the question is, you know, what comes after postmodernism? And it's from a person allegedly named John Smith, which may, you know, I'm sorry, hopefully I didn't just out someone's actual name on the radio. I'm wondering if he's going with this postmodern notion of the every person by choosing what can only be described as a sort of neutral sort of name. And I've just offended all the John Smiths out there. But yes, so all posts are concerned with what went before them.
Mm.
And in the case of postmodernism, it's a bit of a slippery word. You can lump people in as modernists who some people say, oh, no, they're postmodernists, and the same back and forth. But you know, what's really interesting now in aesthetics, which is not an area I'm particularly familiar with, it's modernism has a particular kind of emphasis on formal techniques, many people will say. And so in reaction to, say, the somewhat less mannered art of the Enlightenment or Romanticism, which was trying to represent reality but also had a whole bunch of textures over it, which were noticeably sort of enhancements of what they were portraying, modernism became more obsessed, as artists, modernists tend, with you know, the act of expressing something and understanding something and the way we perceive things. So if you think about Picasso, right, it's all about breaking up things of perception, or maybe slightly more easily if you think about, you know, the Impressionists, it's about how stuff appears to us through the medium of seeing, rather than, you know, the idea that you're making an unmediated copy of reality. If you think about Joyce, it's about trying to get at the, who's a modernist writer, right?
Yeah,
trying to get at what's really going on in people by having this stream of consciousness approach to some of the episodes in Ulysses, but also all these very, very mannered throwing in of all the associations which Bloom and Daedalus are having and are sort of out there to be had. What's strictly interesting about modernism, many people argue, is that they're still trying to get at truth. They're trying to get at what it's like to be a person, the human condition in itself. They're trying to get at, you know, what's really going on in the thing, or what's really going on in the artistic act. And so there's this sort of faith that we can get to that. And sometimes people say it's associated with utopianism. You know, if you look at some of the futurists, or if you look at some of the movements in modern art, a lot of it is about projecting into some kind of future, which could be a dystopian as much as a utopian future. So that's what's going on in aesthetics. And postmoderns are people who sort of reject all of that very serious attempt to get at what's true, and just want to sort of play. And they help themselves to all kinds of whatevers they want to lay their hands on. You know, inspirations and images from different periods, different materials, and so forth. And there's this sense of sort of play, which can make, you know, some postmodern art quite effective. I'm thinking about Jeff Koons, if you know, the Baltimore-based artist.
Yeah.
Well, he's from Baltimore. I doubt he lives in Baltimore now, where his father owns a number of car dealerships. But anyway, so Jeff Koons is famous for these really big balloon dogs made out of really shiny metal. And if you go and see them, they're quite cool, actually, just like his topiary dog, which is, you know, ludicrous and playful and a bit silly, outside the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, which is made out of flowers. It is extremely cool, and I think is arguably better than the whole museum itself. So, I mean, and in postmodern architecture, I mean, there's you know, you can contrast it to sort of modernist architecture. If you look at the work of Mies van der Rohe, right, you know, black buildings and things like that, right, or Le Corbusier, these really clean, straight lines and things like that. Postmodern architecture will have all sorts of stuff stuck onto it, right? And this can be done well, maybe, you know, and then not so well. I'm thinking of some buildings, municipal buildings of Mississauga, Ontario, which are just silly. They have clock towers and random bridges and columns, and it's just not a, I mean, you know, postmodernism, like all arts and thinking, can go wrong or be done badly. I think that's maybe one of the lessons of
right.
today.
And so that's it in art. Is there, if you like, postmodern thinking? Is there a postmodern way of looking at the world?
Yeah, now this would be something I'd be more familiar with. And in fact, that's what I want to talk about. Now, I'm not coming from this point of view. I'm what we sometimes call analytic or English-speaking philosopher in my day job. I'd be there screaming, you know, rigor, clarity at my students, which the university's asked me to stop. And but there is stuff going on in postmodern thinking, which I think we need to engage with. I mean, possibly behind the question is the fact that he who must not be named, Jordan Peterson, has accused postmodernism of allying with Marxism or basically being the same as Marxism and post-structuralism and all these isms, which are actually quite distinct, to basically destroy the modern world, right? Which is why he wants to defund all the departments which have any whiff of this kind of thing. Apparently, he even came up with was proposing a program by which you could, you know, find postmodern words in course descriptions, and then they would all be there for the chop, right?
I mean, because I've seen the argument made. I don't know if that's exactly what Peterson's argument made, but that you can draw a line from the era of fake news we live in today to various university departments in the 70s saying, well, what is truth? Is truth all relative? So we reach a point where, well, nothing's true. So we're all existing within our own little truth bubble.
Sure. And, like, you know, in many ways, postmodernism does get there. I think it's important that we follow the route which gets us to there. And then maybe we can ask the question, what comes next? Right. So in many ways, you know, postmodernism is, and post-structuralism, and these are different things. Postmodernism, I think it's really important to keep them separate. But post-structuralism is what's after structuralism, right? And postmodernism is what's after modernism, right? And so what we have in the past, and this has been massively overblown, but it's true, grand narratives, understandings of history where we see it as progressing to a certain point, right? Whether it's the Enlightenment idea that we're eventually going to know everything and then everything will be sorted and we'll have the perfect society because we can design it along rational lines, right? No Enlightenment thinker, I don't know, maybe Condorcet, right? But very few Enlightenment thinkers you'd want to read believe just that and see that as completely unproblematic and sorted, right? In fact, if you're talking about Immanuel Kant, or if you're talking about Hegel, if you're talking about, you know, Marx, who's a sort of materialist version of Hegel, you know, all of them realize that the story is a bit complicated. And there are ways in which we can, you know, fail to grasp what's going on. You know, our inner lives, our ability to know whatever is the truth is complicated, right? And so, in many ways, sometimes people see this chasm opening up in front of us as starting when Kant talked about how all knowledge of truth, right, took place in the context of our perceiving, right? And all our perceiving takes place in the context of space and time. And there's no outside of our perception, our perceiving and its context for us to get to say, aha, I've got my hands on the real thing. I absolutely know what's true.
So there's no objective truth. There's only kind of a solipsistic truth.
That seems kind of unfair, right? You know, I mean, there's no objective truth if you mean that you can get beyond your perceptions and grasp the actual thing, right? Because how did you perceive that, right? Are you touching it? Are you, you know, is it an activity of the mind? I mean, which Plato thought, right? You know, which you could grasp the essence of things unmediated by the senses, say, right? And that's not solipsism. I mean, Kant was actually quite rigid in his belief that these structures, he called them categories, you know, had, were not to be violated, you know, had a definite order, which, you know, only this kind of stuff is truth. But it got away from the idea of the unmediated, you know, grabbing of whatever really is there, right? And that is where postmodernism comes in, right? And so it's as much of a question of, you know, a distrust of grand narratives, which is how Lyotard describes postmodernism, that we don't believe in any of these grand narratives anymore, whether they're utopian or potentially dystopian. You know, the biggest of grand narratives, of course, being the Christian one that eventually there'll be the apocalypse and then et cetera, et cetera. We'll all be happy in heaven, except for you. You're not. But also this question about truth, right? I mean, about the – and so while – before Kant, this is why he had to write, you know, lots of people point out these things about how we can only see the surface of things, and it led it to a fairly thoroughgoing set of skepticisms, right? After Kant, many, many thinkers still didn't feel like Kant had given us, you know, a satisfactory answer to our desire to get at the objective truth, right? So, and again, this is something modernism is constantly wrestling with. Now, postmodernism has, might get to post-structuralism, then again, I might not. Postmodernism has sort of gives up on worrying about this to some extent, and again, is ready to play with some of these ideas. Yeah. So Lyotard talks about justice in terms of games. Baudrillard, who's another famous postmodernist as opposed to a post-structuralist, talks, you know, just gives up on the quest for objective truth, and talks about the simulacrum, right? And so that, you know, it's all surface, and we don't need to know whether there's anything behind the simulacrum, you know, the simulation. We don't know whether it's true or false, and maybe we don't care, right? And so behind this is the idea that maybe there is no objective truth, and it, at least in any case, people all around us are constructing different kinds of truths. People are uttering different kinds of their own version of truth. And they're playing with this stuff and they're throwing all sorts of stuff too. Now, you can think this is cool. You can be, I like mashing up Japanese anime with, you know, bear music or something like that, right? And you might like to have a politics where it's sort of festival and circus and making fun of people as a way of doing politics, right? On the other hand, you know, so you might be a postmodernist and going out there and actively propagating this kind of thing. On the other hand, you might recognize...
So are trolls on the internet postmodernists then?
Well, I think this is a very, very good question, right? So you, on the other hand, you might, you know, realize that we're living in a condition of postmodernity or in postmodernity, right? And hate it. You might think, you know, I don't like this uncertainty. I'm still trying to find some kind of agreement. I'm uncomfortable with the idea that we can just play all the time. And I think you're right. I think, you know, part of the postmodern condition is... This is not just being embraced by the left. I think this is another mistake Jordan Peterson makes. But by the right. I mean, we have in the president of the United States someone who doesn't believe in objective reality and is performing whatever the heck mashup he wants on a given, I was going to say day, but tweet.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and trolls on the internet and a lot of Jordan Peterson's followers are seem to be quite comfortable with this kind of postmodern condition. Breitbart, if you've ever looked at it, and do please God don't, you know, also has encouraged this, right? And now again, you know, Steve Bannon is an interesting figure in that I think he likes to sow chaos, and he claims that he's basically a Leninist, right? Which is exactly what, you know, postmodernists are opposed to. Leninists, and are particularly, but Marxists generally, have certain certainties. They believe that the world is structured according to material inequalities, to inequalities of wealth and class structures. And so they make rubbish postmodernists. And in fact, postmodernists and Marxists have not gotten along, right? And post-structuralists wouldn't, who are people who resisted, you know, maybe in point of view of Marxism, resisted this sort of rigid confidence in both a narrative that, you know, eventually will be in the workers' paradise, and a rigid analysis that we've really got our handle on what's going on here, people, which we associate with thinkers like Althusser. You know, post-structuralists don't give over to the sort of crazy play of the postmodernists, but in fact are, you know, in the form of Foucault especially, but also Derrida, concerned about what kind of politics and ethics are going to follow from this. And again, so for the most part, postmodernists and post-structuralists were accused of not having an ethics or having a politics because they didn't believe in this sort of absolute objective truth, which would ground that. But I think if we're asking ourselves, what's after postmodernism, you know, it's really, really difficult for us to think beyond that. Because I think we see, look, we don't have this grasp of truth, whether it's whether your genitalia make you a particular gender or not, right? Or whether, you know, the Western civilization has encapsulated all sorts of absolute truths, which we know in some kind of way, which we can never let go of, and everybody should know. And if they don't, they're just destroying the basis of our society, right? I think we all know deep down that we have reason for lack of confidence in that, and that, you know, to some extent, even in our science and physics, and this is a whole nother talk, you know, go look at the work of Thomas Kuhn, a certain amount of construction is going on for us to make sense of the world. So it's quite reasonable to be anxious about this, right? So what comes after postmodernism? It's up to you, right? I mean, a lot of people, now not surprisingly, because academics have to write books, there's talk about a post-postmodernism, and sometimes that's cashed out in things like a new sincerity.
Yeah.
Right. And so you're not going to be as...
some signs of, certainly in writing anyway, you see some signs of it. There's a lot of essayists who approach their topics in a very sincere way. And even like novelists, there seems to be a trend towards writing in a much simpler way, and there's less a kind of literary pyrotechnics.
Right. And so they might be more skeptical. They might be more stripped down, like in the old modernist or realist kind of tradition in the arts. Right. And in politics, they might, you know, eschew all this play in favor of maybe a kind of concrete critical engagement with whatever you're critically engaged with, right? It can be from the right or the left. I think probably one of the problems is the new sincerity can't be the old sincerity, right? Because I don't think any of us believe we're living in a society where there's this kind of agreement about what's important and what isn't, right? And so, I, you know, it's quite curious. One of the problems for postmodernism, right, is it can't be the end of history, to sort of double down on Francis Fukuyama. You know, it can't be the culmination of history, because that's exactly the kind of thing it doesn't believe in. And yet it's in the very post-modernist word, it doesn't necessarily have the resources to move on.
What comes after post-modernism is Brexit. Graham Finley, thanks a million for coming into us. We'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by AvantCard. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.